We have Alyssa up here with us tonight.
Hi, guys.
And she's going to be helping us field some questions, in case you're wondering, what's Alyssa doing? That's what she's doing. We had so many questions come in last week that we didn't have time to get to, and there was an overwhelming amount of people that were like, we have more questions. So we decided to do a bonus panel tonight and kind of get to some of those unanswered ones. So that being said, you will see behind me as my large head is in the way. Can everybody see this, or is this, like, completely blocked? Okay. Hold on 1 second.
Is that better? Can people see it now? Everyone? A little bit?
Maybe a little bit better.
Yeah.
Hey, write this down if you have a question. 503-433-3136.
And we'll say it again throughout the night. If you still can't see it, and come up with some questions.
Exactly. Alyssa.
Perfect. Let's start. So the first question that I have, this is a question from last week that we didn't have the opportunity to get to. And just to start it off, it says, what do you do if you feel like marriage and dating is 5 to 6 years away? And how do you process that / adjust if needed?
Do you have a formula that, like, if I add this plus this, it equals 5 years? I think the question, when you don't feel settled to date, when you don't have a when you don't have a direction where you know, like, hey, this is it, she's the one, he's the one, here we go. I think the biggest encouragement I give you is start thriving at life. The worst thing you can do is pause long enough to lose momentum. And the best thing you can do is say, I'm going to live life to the fullest, to the best that I can understand it, as much as I can push myself to keep growing and changing. And then really, ideally, when you feel like it's time for you to start dating, then someone worthy of distracting you from the phenomenal life you built should be the way that they grab your attention.
That's good.
Yeah, I agree. Good thing I married you. He's really smart. But, yeah, I would just add to that, just kind of echoing what he's saying, but just remembering that just because you feel like maybe you don't see yourself being settled down 5 to 6 years, we don't really ever know God's plan for us. Like, you have no idea what could come in around the next corner and what could change and what could shift in your heart. And so just be open. Be constantly evaluating. For me, like, Ed and I, we didn't start dating until we were 24, and that was the first time I ever dated. A lot of you have heard our story, but just there was a lot of moments in that journey for me that I questioned, like, will I ever get to this point? But I determined I was just going to live my life and do the things that God placed in front of me and the opportunities that he gave me. And just pursue the passions that I had. And if the day came that someone came into that picture, then I would open that door and explore that. So, yeah, that's what I would say.
Okay, kind of backing up with that, what are your guys' opinions about long-distance dating? So if it's kind of that 5 to 6 year process that this person's talking about or that we're questioning about, what do you guys feel about long-distance? How long should that be? And that type of thing.
That's a good question. Our first, 8-9 months was 100% long distance. Ed lived in Centralia and I lived up here. We were at different churches. He worked schedules often, like, he wouldn't get off till like 11. And I worked during the day. So a lot of opposites like that. But I am of the opinion, and I'm not saying this for everyone, but what I tend to believe is there's nothing wrong with long distance, but you have to go into it fully intentional. It works if you work it. It's such a cliche saying, but it's so true. It really isn't for everybody. And so if you find yourself not really being able, we all have those friends that kind of suck at texting back, or like every time you call them, they never answer their phone, and they're just not. You know what I'm saying? There's just some people that aren't very good communicating via phone, either text or talking. And if you are that person, long distance probably won't work very well for you. Ed and I found a rhythm, and we would talk throughout the day, either via text on breaks when we were working, or he would call me after his shifts every night, and we would FaceTime. But if you don't, like, if that's not your thing, don't try and make it your thing, if that makes sense. Moving on.
Cool, moving on. So the next question is, how can you be just friends?
I like the air quotes, just friends. I love, oh, we're just friends. There's nothing serious. You're spending every waking moment with them. You are not just friends. I've said this before, relationships are built on time, words, and actions. And if you are spending a lot of time with someone, you're saying a lot of kind words, and you're giving them a lot of kind actions, then you will end up being more than just friends. And that's a filter I'd encourage you to use with anybody. There's a good chance that every friend that you have, if you're like, well, that's just who I am, there's a good chance. Everything okay? We okay? All right. Good job. Proud of you. There's a chance that you are treating every single friend you have like someone more than just a friend. So I would encourage you to kind of figure out, okay, if I wouldn't treat this person like that, then why am I treating this one? We can't play favorites like that. We have to really decide. You fixed it, and then it turned off. Yeah. Really proud. Oh, it's back. Good. But time, words, and actions. The more time, the more words, the more actions, you're going to end up with someone who's more than just a friend.
Yeah. I would add, don't be afraid to be friends. I think I see this a lot, and I've seen it a lot in myself in the past before Ed came into my world. But I think it's easy in our season of life when you're, I'm going to use this phrase and you can laugh at it because it's ridiculous, but single, ready to mingle. When you're in that state of mind, hey, it's a real thing. But when you are at a place where you're like, man, I've got some stuff going for me. I've got a good job. I know what I'm doing. I really feel like I'm okay to date. You know, it's a good time for that. And it's easy when you're in that state of mind to every single place you go, you kind of, whether you realize it or not, have this filter of like, is that somebody that I could be with? Is that bae? Like, and that's like our immediate first filter. But I would challenge us, and this is something that I really journeyed several years ago before I dated, is I wanted to get to the place where I could just be friends and enjoy people. And out of that kind of mindset and out of that intentionality in just getting to know the people around you for who they are and what they have to offer is so much, it will set you so much better in a place to truly get to know people versus what they want you to see when you are interested in them. Does that make sense? So.
One other filter, be careful who you share your heart and your dreams with. That is not generally a cross-gender friend thing, safe thing to do. That is a way to quickly get your heart attached to someone else. Is when you start dreaming and you start sharing your heart, and this is where we're going, it's what I'm so excited about, it's really quick and easy to merge your hearts together. So be careful with that too.
Awesome answer. So the next question is, if you know that you want to be more than friends with this person, what is kind of your guys' thoughts on the process of starting dating? How many dates should you go on before you say, hey, can we actually date? And kind of what are your guys' thoughts on that?
I say this all the time, that coffee's like Christian first base. So a meal is too much dedication too quick. Don't take them to a meal. That's too much. Another one in the Northwest is a hike. Hey, can we go on a hike?
Group hike?
Yeah. And by the way, this is the funny thing. This is the funny thing is, hey, I'm putting a group hike together, but you're the only one I've texted about that. Like, I think that's just really funny to me.
It was like the concert.
Yeah. But I would encourage you, if you are getting to the point, if you're getting to the point where you feel the urge to say something, then I would encourage you, not like out of the blue, here we go, walk up to them after a service, I think I love you. Like, don't do that. But what I would encourage you to do is not to wait, all right? I think we can mess ourselves up when we wait too long to declare what we are. When it's this kind of nebulous, unclear, cloudy thing that just kind of exists, and neither person is willing to step up and really declare that this is what it is, then really we can't be surprised when it ends quickly too. Because when we never really make a declaration and say, this is what I want, this is what I think we should be, this, I want to date you, I want to call you my girlfriend, I want to call you my boyfriend, whatever, you deserve that. Have that conversation early rather than late.
I said this last week, but I'm going to say it again. Guys, listen to me for a second. Gentlemen, it is your job to pursue the girl that you want to date. Your job. Girls, it is your job to patiently allow them to go through this process. Patiently. It is not easy to wait, and it's not easy being the one with the responsibility of asking the tough question, hey, I'm interested in you. Do you want to go out? That's not an easy conversation to have. So give them grace, but allow them to have that conversation and be the one to initiate. Don't just tumble over them and be like, what are we doing? What is this? Why are we going out to coffee? Like, let him lead that. If it gets to the point, like I had said, you know, if you're a couple coffee dates in, he's taking you out to dinner, he's paid for your dinner, that's always a big sign. If that's happening and there's still no conversation about like, hey, are we, you know, are we interested in each other? Are we going to make this official? Then that's when you can respectfully say, hey, you know, we've gone out a few times, I kind of need to know where we stand, and then put it back in his court. Cool?
So this next question is, what do you do if you're constantly friend-zoned? Oh.
Burn their house down. That's funny. That's so funny.
This is great.
It's funny because I've been there. I was the guy growing up that either was their confessional, because no one really understood what I believed and they all thought I was Catholic. So they'd come to me and be like, hey, Father Ed, I need to confess something. Right? And it's not who I am.
And then
I was also the guy that got but you're like a big brother to me. It's like, that stinks, man. Like, I want to take you out. That's weird now, you know? I would encourage you, if you're constantly friend-zoned, then remind... I think Taylor described it well last week. There's this part of it where you don't... How do I put it? If you are really convinced and you want to pull the God told me card, because that should be the card that you are pulling if you are consistently going back to the same person, right? If you really want to pull that, then my encouragement to you would be you need to just completely thrive at life and move on. That would be my encouragement. And because this is it, either you have the right thing at the wrong time, which is still the wrong thing, by the way, the right thing at the wrong time, still the wrong thing, or there is a better fitting match for you that you need to grow into being compatible to. And either way, the response to both of those things is to just focus on your life and thrive at your life.
From a girl perspective, I think a lot of times, from what I've heard and observed, guys tend to use the friend zone term a lot. Like, oh man, she friend zoned me. Guys, I want to speak directly to you for a second from a girl's perspective. And someone, Ed just referred to himself growing up like being in the friend zone a lot. Me as his wife now, I'm really thankful for that, because I'm thankful that happened. I know it sucked for him at the time, and for me, like I said, I didn't date till I was 24. Like, there's a lot of emotions you battle with that. But that being said, there is somebody out there that God is preparing. And I'm not saying there's just the one, but there people are we are all on a journey being prepared of where we need to be when we meet the person that we're going to spend the rest of our life with. And so don't get discouraged if you feel like you keep trying and you're striking out and you're just constantly the big brother or the confidant or whatever. Just know that I'm saying this as experiencing on the other side with Ed. Like, I'm thankful that he didn't date around a ton and I get to experience all of that now because of that. So don't be discouraged. Hopefully that makes sense. But
so we have some questions about finding the person to date. What are your views on online dating or apps like Tinder and those type of sites?
What? I don't... If you're using an app where you're swiping, like, to judge whether you're going to date, like, that's weird to me. I don't understand that. My thing with online dating is it can't be something you hide behind because of a lack of confidence. I'm a firm believer. Like, I have friends that met and have phenomenal marriages through online dating. Like, I don't think that in itself is bad. I think if it's an indicator that, or not an indicator, if it is a result of giving up internally, then that in itself is when things get out of balance. And I would encourage you to make sure that you're pairing something like that with being in healthy community. You know, putting yourself out there, doing life with and around people that you can meet in person. But hey, if it works for you, then sweet, own it. That's great. But it cannot be something that I'm going to try to be something online because I believe that who I am in person is not good enough. That can't be the reason that you're doing online dating.
Awesome. So another question is, where do you meet people to potentially date?
Online. Just kidding. Man, I think healthy community is really important. I think doing life and rubbing shoulders with people that are doing life the way you want to do life is really important. That's why we do UDY. That's why we do this. That's why I think church is great. That's why I think serving places is great. It's incredible what happens when you put yourself around people that are living the kind of life you want to live. And when you do that, generally you're going to find someone worthy or compatible with what you believe in, the kind of life you want to live.
I would add to that too. I kind of reached a point, again, hadn't dated till I was 24, dated Ed. Before that, I kind of realized I came to this point of like, man, I just don't see any potentials. Like, at the time I was like, this is just slim pickings, man. Like, I don't know what my options here are, hence going to Centralia. But no, that being said, if you're kind of at a place, again, balancing this with what I said earlier of not every place that you go, your first thought when entering into that place shouldn't be like, who's the fresh meat, like, so to speak. I know that's a bad analogy, but in your mind, it shouldn't be the first thing that pops in your mind of like, who can I meet and potentially ask out. But that being said, is if you kind of evaluate where you're at in the things that you're doing and kind of realize that you're stagnant and not really meeting new people, challenge yourself to do something new, to try something new. Go to, you know, go with some friends to up to Seattle and hang out and walk around and meet different people, or, you know, go to, you know, whatever that is, but try something new, put yourself out there. Because I think sometimes it's easy for us to fall into this rut, and this is totally what I did. And I had to really kind of come to a place where I was willing to do something different and put myself out there and meet new people and not just stay within my same group of friends because it was comfortable.
That's great. And I just wanted to also say, if you guys have any other questions that kind of tee off of one of the questions, feel free to text the number. And if you can't see it, it is...
Can everybody see it now?
Yeah.
Are we good? Yay.
Are we decent? Awesome.
Sweet.
Perfect. So feel free to keep those texts coming in. So the next one is, where's the line between having good standards and not settling versus being too picky?
That's a really good question. What's the line? So I make sure I heard this.
Yeah,
what's
I can
the
read
line
it again.
Between being
good, like
good
not,
standards,
yeah, good
high
standards,
standards,
not settling versus just being too picky or too particular?
Okay. I'm going to direct this at the ladies for a second, because I know you. Make sure that the things that you're filtering for your future husband are character traits and not just outward appearance things. So if you have, maybe you're the kind of person that you have a couple guys in your life that have been interested in the past, but you kind of written them off because they, you know, their hairstyle is not what you want it to be, or things like that, that, yes, are important. It's important to be physically attracted to someone. I wholeheartedly believe that. So I'm not saying you should fake that, but I would challenge you to evaluate what your filters are and ask yourself, do I really know what my standards are and what are non-negotiables for me? For instance, for me, my list, so to speak, was really geared towards some character qualities, such as integrity and generosity and good leadership and a love for people and a love for ministry. Those were big filters for me, relationship with God, good relationship with family. And so when Ed and I started getting to know each other and I was interested in him, those were the things that I filtered through. And that was what I made my focus. So I would challenge you, please, again, don't settle. I love that that was asked, but don't also let good options go by because you get hung up on little nitpicky things.
I would add to that that the character base, we are young enough that there's a good chance that the fruit that is on your list you're not seeing yet because they haven't had a chance to bear that fruit, but the thing to look for is the character base that's going to bring it eventually, right? So if you want someone to be financially stable, hey, they're 21, probably not going to happen, but they should have a work ethic, right? And the work ethic will bear the fruit of being financially stable, right? They may not have had a chance to prove that they're huge family people, maybe they come from a dysfunctional family, but loyalty to people, you will bear the fruit of that in your own family later. So I would start with the character trait and then understand that the fruit will come most likely later.
One last thing to add to that. You cannot be frustrated that no one you're meeting meets your standards if you don't know what your standards are. So make sure that you know what those are, what your non-negotiables are, the things that you'd love to have. One of the things that was on my list was that my future husband would love music so we could share that passion. Now, if Ed ended up like not really being that into music, that wouldn't have been a deal breaker for me. But the cool thing is God cares about the little things. And one of the very first things, literally the first thing that Ed and I did together on our own was go see a concert. And we just were like having a blast. And it was in that moment that I realized like, wow, if this works out, this is so cool because I can share this passion with him and geek out about music and bands and he'll totally get that. And so kind of know what those are, know what the things that you'd like to have, and know where that line is, because that's important.
Sorry, one last thing. Make sure your list isn't based out of your insecurity. Make sure your non-negotiables aren't based out of your dysfunction. Make sure that what you're calling a non-negotiable isn't an excuse for you not to grow. So if you're running into something and every single person, you're hitting the eject button because you run into that, there's a problem. If the person that you're dating obviously is going to keep changing, then you're the common denominator. So maybe there's something that needs to change internally with you first. So something to think about.
Perfect. Love that. So the next question is, just loved it. Love it. Love it. The next question is, how should God be a factor in your relationship?
Obviously, we see everything through the lens of Jesus, right? Like, we're Jesus people. We believe in God. We believe he should be the foundation stone of our lives individually before we start dating. I think it should be this. I think it should be the foundation that you build everything else through. Or on, if that makes sense. We see in the Gospels the story of the guy who built his house on the firm foundation. The storms came and his house stood. And then there's the person who built their house on the sand. A marriage, a relationship together, is not something you want to build on shaky ground. So now that being said, I don't think you should pull that, but God told me we should go to taco time, right? God told me that we should go do this. God told, like, you. Pulling the God card in a relationship is not fair, right? But at the same time, it should be the filter in which all the decisions you make together are made through.
Yeah. Yeah, to me, in my mind, God is not negotiable in your relationship. He should be the foundation. If you are a believer in Jesus and you model your life after what he teaches us in the Bible, then the person that you're dating should have that same belief. And if they don't, you are going to hit a point in your relationship where things don't line up and you're going to be butting heads and having arguments and disagreements. You'd be frustrated that they don't want to come to church with you, or they don't ever want to talk about God, or, you know, do devotions together. Whatever that is, just know if that's where you're at, you're going to come up against that issue. And honestly, like, I love the fact that even when Ed and I were dating, some of our dates were simply going to coffee shops and just doing devotions together. And we didn't do that all the time. I know some people that they felt like that was too personal and they didn't do that until after they were married. Whatever that is for you, make sure that time, though, of you doing devotions together or talking about God together isn't the only time that you ever have devotional time. Your separate devotions are at the foundation of everything. Your personal time with God comes before anything else. And so if you're finding yourself in a relationship and you are depending on that other person to get you to church or to get you to read your Bible or to get you to pray, there's a problem. So just make sure there's good balance there.
So here's another question. It says, last week you talked about the importance of having conversations early on in relationships about boundaries. When is it appropriate or the right time to have those conversations, and who should be the one that initiates it?
That's a loaded question. Okay, so last week we talked a lot about boundaries and kind of having conversations early in regards to what those boundaries are and what, again, are non-negotiables and setting those expectations. I would say the right time to have those is the moment that you both are in agreement that you are officially in a relationship. So if the first time that Ed and I hung out together, we had these like deep conversations about what we would and wouldn't do, I feel like that just would have gotten awkward fast. But the day that he invited me to Centralia and toured me around and took me to 8 different coffee shops, at the end of that, when we said, okay, we're dating, we're in this, we both are serious about this, we had that conversation that night, I think, about boundaries. And we had subsequent conversations throughout the first several months of our relationship. And that's what I would encourage you in, is don't think that by one conversation that, like, that's the only conversation you need to have in regards to boundaries. Speaking from experience, me having never dated before, I was completely unaware of certain things that I just wasn't aware of. And or being alone together, and to be honest, the temptations that would come with being in a house alone together. And so we had conversations kind of after we'd been dating, you know, a month or 2 months or whatever, as those times occurred, of like, okay, we are not going to be in a house alone together ever. If we're going to be one-on-one somewhere, we're going to be somewhere that's public with other people around. That doesn't mean we're in a group date all the time, but we're not going to ever be somewhere that we are by ourselves. And so know that those conversations are going to be multiple. You're going to come back and revisit that, but don't try and have that conversation before you are both in agreement that you, like, hey, we're dating now, we're committed to each other. Okay, cool, let's lay some boundaries.
The big filter with boundaries is they should never be reactive. And so that's the problem we get ourselves into, is we don't define them, and then we get caught in the moment, and then anything's acceptable but, right? So you want to know that this is where the boundary is, not before the heat of the passion, in a well-litted place where you both are sane and in your right mind. That is when you have the conversation about boundaries.
That's awesome. Can I add to that?
So I'm going to add one last thing, but
lighted, well
well lighted. I like it. If you find yourself in a situation with the person you're dating and you feel uncomfortable, but you don't say anything, it's not their fault for not knowing that. So we all have different experiences from our past, or we have different things that, you know, some people are very naturally just touchy-feely and are big huggers and will, like, want to rub your back all the time. And some people are just really, like, ugh, don't touch me, like, not comfortable with that. So you need to be honest about who you are and what kind of makes you feel uncomfortable. And in those situations, you need to speak up and be honest. So that's really important, is just be honest throughout the whole process and have those conversations as they come up. Don't let them fester and build, and then big things down the road become issues.
So backing up on that question is, how far is too far in regards to physical boundaries? So when you're setting that, what are you guys' opinions? Jeez.
This is always awkward to answer. I think we find our definition in the Bible, and sex is sex. And when it comes to whatever variation we believe we had found a loophole, if the word sex is after it, it's not a loophole anymore. And that's about as plainly as I know to explain it. I would encourage you in this, is boundaries is not something you flirt the line with. Boundaries is something you leave plenty of space and then just enjoy it all after marriage. And again, do we see purity in the Bible? Do we see boundaries in the Bible? Absolutely. But to me, boundaries are more about a couple setting a goal and keeping it. And we said this last week. The same thing that keeps you pure before marriage will be the same thing that keeps you on budget afterwards. The same thing that keeps you pure before marriage will be the same thing that you use to work through issues in your marriage later. In essence, self-control is really what we're talking about. And I would encourage you, if you're realizing as a couple you have self-control issues before you ever get married, it will just become larger once you are. And so, again, purity, Bible, sex, like, yeah, it's all there, absolutely. But I would encourage you not to blame it on the Bible. Don't blame it on God. Just admit that there's a self-control issue there, and then figure out where the boundary should lay so self-control doesn't become a problem.
This might seem kind of extreme or just too intense, but I would say, like, a filter that Ed and I used a lot when we were dating, we both were leading different ministries, and so our filter was, is this something that we would be embarrassed if one of the students that we were leading found out about? And we found that that was just a great filter for us, because it immediately reminded us, hey, there's people that are observing our relationship and seeing us, and not to, you know, be constantly afraid of what people are thinking, but genuinely there was people looking up to us, looking to us as an example, and we didn't ever want to do something that was going to cause people to question our intentions or motives or decision in that moment. And so that would be my encouragement to you. Think about, you know, if you have a sibling that's younger than you, or you have influence over someone in your life, would you be embarrassed or feel like you had to explain if they heard or knew about the thing that you did with the person that you were dating? So, yeah.
We had a couple people text in about age gaps, and they're wondering, what do you guys think is an appropriate age gap?
Can I say what you said the other day?
This is age gaps. There's people that live by the model that age is just a number. Right? And yes, that is true. Ages are numbers. Very true. I think this is the thing about age gaps, is age gaps become problems when one of you is reaching to get closer to the other one. So if you are dating someone who's way older than you, and they have to, and really the reason why it's working is because they are the maturity level that you are at a way younger age, that's a problem. And so you have to evaluate. I mean, I know people that were 11 years apart, got married, totally works out. Absolutely. Great. Awesome. But if you are dating someone who mentally is the same age as you, but physically is way older than you, that's awkward. That's an issue. And people are going to see it, and there's going to be a problem there. But what is okay is when, all right, I'm a little mature for my age, and I'm heading up towards them, then okay, sweet. But I would encourage you, if you attract someone who's way older than you, then ask someone you really trust what they think. That's probably something you wouldn't want to go on that journey by yourself.
Yeah, I would just say, just kind of go back to that, is it's, I don't personally, like I said, we know several couples that are, that have like more than even a 10-year age gap, and they're doing awesome. And so I think it genuinely just depends on the couple. And like Ed said, if one is just extra mature for where they're at in life and it works out, awesome. But if someone's coming down to their level, that probably indicates an issue. So if it's something that's really noticeable and the people in your world are like, what's going on, then that's probably an indicator that you might want to relook at some things. So
the next question is, what's the best way to move forward after you've had a bad relationship?
The best way to move on is to move on. And I know that seems like a really simple answer, but I think a lot of us live in self-pity when we should have moved on a long time ago. We allow ourselves to sit in hurt because it justifies that it didn't work out. And we allow ourselves to stay there. In essence, we become handicapped instead of moving on. The best way to move on is to move on. Get promoted. Go back to school. Get healthy. Go work out. Pick up a hobby. Do something. The best way to move on is to really, truly, I know I keep repeating myself, but it's as simple but as complicated as this. The best way to move on is to literally move on. Admit what it was, learn from your mistakes, and then define a new picture of North and go find it.
Yeah, on the flip side with that, I would encourage you, if you experienced in a bad relationship in the past, move forward in that, like Ed said, and allow yourself to move ahead in life, but recognize too that that experience shaped you. And so when it is time for you to go into a new relationship, something I'm thankful for with Ed was that he was really transparent with me in the areas that went badly in his past relationship. And he was upfront, hey, this is a tendency of mine because of what I experienced, or I feel myself kind of questioning this area because of my past experience. And so don't think that you can just shove that experience away and not ever be honest about it with the next person that you're with, especially if that's someone that you see yourself with long term, because that experience shaped you. You learned from it, and part of your values came out of that experience. So don't feel like you can't ever be honest about that experience.
Cool. So we just have a couple more questions and then we're going to wrap it up. So we had some questions about, how do you know when to cut off an unhealthy relationship, and how do you know if a relationship is unhealthy or toxic?
I love this framework, and I'm going to explain it and then apply to this. I love this question, is it wise? Is staying in this relationship wise? And is it wise in three angles? In light of who I have been, in light of who I am right now, and in light of where I'm going, is staying with this person wise? And so what am I trying to say? In light of my tendencies, am I attracted to dysfunction? In light of where I'm at currently, is this healthy for me? And in light of where I'm going, can I see this person with me? And if you can't line up all three of those things, then it's probably time to consider, all right, maybe this isn't the one, this isn't my forever one, right? But the other thing is, if you ever reach a point where they're causing harm to you or your family, mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually, then tap out at that point too.
I said this last week too, but just to end with that, dating is, yes, there will be challenges, but dating is supposed to be the fun part. It's supposed to be the easy part. It's the part where you get to know each other and you have fun, and the guy takes you out on nice dates and pays for things, and you go do things together, and like that's the fun time. Is when you cross into being engaged, that's when you start having more of those conversations and heart to hearts. But if you're having a lot of just difficulty and like just constantly being in each other's faces and ripping each other apart, or having problem after problem after problem when you've been together for a couple months, that's probably a sign that there's a lot of unhealthiness, probably on both sides, that need to be resolved separately before it's healthy to be in a relationship.
Cool. So our last question is pertaining to you guys and your guys' relationship. It says, what did you discover was most important in finding each other attractive?
Spicy. Okay. I feel really on the spot, but I'll answer this first. For me, the thing that, so Ed and I were mutual friends for a long time. We were friends through Taylor and Noel. And so I knew of him, and I knew the things that Taylor would say to me as he was trying to matchmake us. But over the years, kind of like establishing our friendship, I just started to notice how well he carried himself. Anytime that he came up here and spoke, he always just really walked in confidence in his faith and what he believed and what he stood for. And I kind of observed from a distance how much he cared about the people in his life. And when he would refer to stories, either about his family or friendships, and that spoke a lot to me. That was probably the initial thing that drew me to him, that and the fact that I thought he was attractive. Heyo, you know, that's what I'm saying. Physical attraction is important. But that being said, that piece, being physically attracted to him, would have fallen flat if what I observed about who he was wasn't compelling to me, if that makes sense. So I would say that was the initial thing that drew me to him. But
yeah, I would say the thing that attracted me to Brittany is she had built a life and she didn't need me. And I think that was super attractive. She didn't need anyone really to pick her up, move her forward, anything like that. She had started UDYA and it had expanded from 7 people as a small group to 40 regular attenders. And Brittany did that. Brittany started it. She ran it. I had nothing to do with that as much as I'd like to try to take credit sometimes. But I like the fact that she knew who she was and where she was going. And of course, I found her attractive too, so that was helpful. But yeah, I'm just gonna pray for us. Sorry, I don't know how to transition out of that question. We're just gonna let that one sit there and simmer for a second. After this, we have a bonfire out there. We have s'mores, so we're gonna eat s'mores and hang out by the fire. And then this is kind of cool. I get to preach this Sunday too, which is gonna be really fun. So. Come to church, please. Preaching to adults can be hard, so come and say nice things while I'm talking, but that would be great. But yeah, I'm just going to pray because I still feel awkward, so I'm going to pray now. Hopefully God can fix it. God, we thank you. We thank you that if we follow the principles we find in your word, we really can develop a relationship that lasts. We can have a relationship that is fun and engaging and life-giving and builds us both. I pray, regardless of where we've been, what we've done, our tendencies, our habits, that we would define a new normal in this area then. And even if we're in a relationship already, would we choose to define a new normal and ask the question, is how we're dating currently healthy? And we pray that your Holy Spirit would guide us in that and direct us in it. We thank you for that in your name. Amen.